Hello and welcome to this episode of Time to Talk Titanic. Now, I'm really excited today because, as a lot of you have maybe seen within the Titanic community online, especially Instagram, if you're active on there, there is a very exciting project in the works that really caught my interest because for those of you that have been following me for a while, you'll know that I myself am very much interested not only in Titanic, that's a big part of it, but in writing, filmmaking, directing, and I've dabbled in acting, you know, here and there. So when I saw this project in the works, I knew that I had to speak to these guys and, you know, get a bit of exposure for the project because I think it looks so worthwhile. And with this platform that I have, I want to use it to do this kind of thing. So I'm really happy today to have on Johnny and Bjorn. Now, they are making a film about Frederick Fleet, who was the lookout for the RMS Titanic. And I'm going to throw over to them now to introduce themselves and talk about the project. So, Johnny and Bjorn, good morning. Hello.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing?
Hey, Aaron. How you doing, mate? Good morning.
Good morning. Good. I hope you weren't out too late last night, you know?
No, not at all. I've got a three-year-old, so not too many late nights for me, unfortunately.
No, for those listening, it's just after 10 a.m. here in the UK, and I think we're all in the UK right now?
Yeah.
We're all UK-based, so we've been very well behaved. We've all went to bed early on Friday night, yeah. And we're up bright and shiny early on Saturday. But super worth it, you know. Even if I was hungover to hell, I'd have jumped on here and done this anyway because I'm just super excited to talk about this, and I hope you guys are too. I'm sure you are.
Definitely, absolutely. Yeah. Any opportunity to chat about our film? So yeah, 100%.
Totally. So I'll throw over to you guys now. So I've given a brief introduction as to kind of what's going on. But to begin with, could you introduce yourselves and then also talk us through the premise of the film Fred and what it entails?
Sure. I'm Bjorn Franklin. I'm one of the writers and directors of Fred. John?
Yep, I'm Johnny, ditto writers and directors of Fred. So me and Bjorn actually go way back. If you want a bit of a background on how we met and stuff. So myself and Bjorn used to be in a band, 15 years ago, would you say?
Quite a while ago.
And just kind of instantly hit it off. We did most of the writing in the band and recording and kind of did that for like, you know, a good 5, 6, 7 years and kind of transitioned over into kind of filmmaking and photography just by chance, really. And here we are today writing a film about Frederick Fleet.
I know, yeah. That's literally exactly what Johnny said. But the film that we're making is, like you said, Aaron, it's about Frederick Fleet, who was one of the lookouts on the Titanic in 1912. He was 25 years old at the time, and he actually survived that night rowing one of the rescue boats to safety, Rescue Boat 6, actually. He went on to live to the age of 77 and then unfortunately took his own life. He actually hanged himself in his back garden. And we came across this story over a year ago now and, you know, immediately was struck by, you know, by that and how sad that was for someone that survived such a terrible disaster to then take his own life years later was just, you know, it definitely... circled our brains for quite some time, so we decided to kind of turn this into a short film which centers around the last week of Fred's life. That is where the film takes place, which is in 1965, and we kind of do very kind of abstract cutbacks to 1912 in the crow's nest, so we're kind of playing with both timelines. But really, in a nutshell, that is, you know, the premise of our film and what we're looking to make here.
Now, you've touched upon parts of the next question, which is good. I like me a good segue. But just to kind of touch back on, so you were both in a band. That's funny. I and quite a few people I know who are also creatives, I feel like a lot of us start off in bands. That's a thing. It's like you need that outlet, and you could go down the writing fan fiction stories and posting them on the internet, or you can be in a band. And you know, I did both. But I love that. So is that kind of how you met? You know, were you both kind of in the music scene, and or you know, how did that go about?
We literally, me and Johnny was in different bands. I was doing like a bit of a singer songwriter thing, and we just kind of connected on, I think it was MySpace. That's how far back it was.
You recall this story better than me, Bjorn, but you MySpace was a strange old world where you kind of hid behind this strange profile with, you know, music, etc. I kind of had a bit of a faceless it was really, wasn't it? It was like Facebook, I guess, was there, but not many people were using it in that sense at the time. And just I kind of just hid behind my profile a little bit and didn't have any pictures of myself or anything, just random stuff on there. And just kind of reached out to Bjorn, and I think he was a bit kind of tentative to accept at the start.
Yeah, he did. It's a funny story. I recently got married, and I told this story in my wedding speech because Johnny was my best man. And I basically just had this message from, and little interest for some fans out there, Johnny's real name is actually Giovanni, but everyone knows him as Johnny. So wow. I just had a message from someone on MySpace called Giovanni, which said, you've got a great voice, want to meet.
Keep it short, to the
we've
point.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, typical me, a week later, we met up in a car park in Derby.
Again, we've all been there.
And, you know, here we are 15 years later, like Johnny said, making a film. So it's quite a funny story.
I love that. Yeah. That is great. That's fantastic. But
yeah, touching on what you said, yeah, we were both in the music scene, and we kind of literally just, you know, it just started as mates hanging out, playing guitar, and Johnny had a bit of a home studio, and I, you know, saw myself as a bit of a songwriter, and we just kind of joined forces, and we just kind of were doing that for quite a while. I had a very small amount of success in, you know, music, played some great shows and some really cool venues, and had a great taste of it, really. But behind all of that, we were always really interested in, you know, I guess the writing side and the visual side of it, really. That's we got so into that, the world building, I guess, of the band. And that just transitioned really naturally into films and filmmaking. Like Johnny said, us both doing like photography and filmmaking and then writing. And just kind of, even before we could, you know, we knew how to use cameras, we were, you know, trying to make short films, you know, back in the day. But what was amazing about that is we really learned our trade, deep in the trenches, you know, on the go, on the job. You know, we didn't go to film school. We just kind of ran with it, and to some extent still are, really. So we're really thankful to still be working together and doing what we love for a living. We joke and often say, I don't know how we're getting away with it.
And you know, if you go onto your website, which is franklinandmarchetta.com, I think I've got the names the right way around. I think that's important. Franklinmarchetta.com.
Yeah.
You'll see that you've produced and directed a lot of music videos. So it's nice to see that you're starting to make this transition into short film. You know, I think people maybe underestimate the kind of work and thought that goes into a music video, because in such a short space of time, depending on the style of music video that it is, but with the majority of them, you're still trying to tell a story. Albeit you're telling a story instead of to a script, you're telling it to a song.
Exactly.
So yeah, it's really interesting, even just looking at your website, to see this transition that you're starting to make. And it seems like such a kind of out of left field thing almost. So to kind of go on to my next question, which I said we kind of touched on, but what was it specifically about Fred's story that, you know, really captured your interest? Because there's a lot of stories when it comes to Titanic, and a lot of them are quite well known.
Yeah.
And, you know, not only what made you want to tell it, but why do you feel it's a story that's worth telling?
Okay. Yeah, quite a bit in there. I think initially it was just over a year ago now. It's actually during lockdown, as most of us probably were, sat in front of the TV, probably watched everything on Netflix. We kind of just came across a documentary by a chap called Tim Moulton, who you might be familiar with. Mm-hmm. He did the Titanic Case Closed documentary on, I think it's on Disney Plus, actually. And it just completely fascinated us, really, in terms of like what we know now and certain things that he uncovered in that documentary. And we kind of dug a little deeper into actually the lookouts being the forefront of a lot of that, and kind of unearthed this crazy story about Frederick Fleet and, you know, what happened to him later in life. And he'd just been dealt such a terrible hand, really. So we kind of went away and just did our due diligence, really. Did quite a bit of research on Fred, whatever we could find on the internet, put it into a little war room and just kind of made a load of notes and made quite a few beats to the film, and then kind of left it there for a good kind of few months. And then Bjorn came back around to it after about 6 months and said, I've just re-looked at our notes and I think we've really got something, and started getting some stuff down on the page. And that's where it started. And from there on, we just kind of spiraled into to Fred's world and Fred's PTSD, and obviously trying to read between the lines. Obviously, Fred's not alive today, nor is, you know, any of his family that we can find. Although I'm sure there are some descendants somewhere, and it'd be great to get in touch. We have actually tried to go down that route. Maybe for another question, but. It's just, you know, what this guy must have gone through, and just reading in between the lines is horrific, absolutely horrific.
Yeah. We found that, I think, with every great story, there's got to be a level of irony. And it felt kind of ironic that he survived this, you know, this disaster by the skin of his teeth, really, because only a few people did survive, to then only, you know, take his own life, you know, by his own hands all those years later. And just something didn't sit right with us, you know, a guy 77 years old taking his own life. It's just, I don't know, for us, it just doesn't feel like something you hear every day. And like Johnny said, we made all these notes about it, and 6 months later I looked at it and I just thought, kind of can't leave this here. We have to do something with this, because we're still kind of, it would still come up in conversation. And then, you know, that was, 8 month process of just kind of version one of the script, version two, version three, and just kind of getting it to a point that actually it felt like, oh, this is really, really something. And I feel like we've landed on that now, and, you know, here we are raising the money for it.
Completely. And I think, you know, it's incredible that although it's a historical drama, and looking at the storyboards almost looks a bit like a horror film. You know, there's one in particular that reminds me of The Fog, which I love horror films. So as soon as I saw that storyboard, I was like, this is ticking boxes that I didn't even know existed right now, in terms of genre and style and, you know, themes that, you know, it's touching on mental health. So although it's a historical film, it feels very current.
It's funny you say that, Aaron, because it was actually, to be fair, it was Johnny that said it. When we first started writing this, it was a straight up drama. That's what this was. It was a dramatic story. And as we started talking about the PTSD and kind of those heavy themes that we learned that Fred would have actually been dealing with through our research, because there's a lot of stuff out there about Fred, which is really helpful. Johnny sort of said, this feels like horrific almost. And then it just was like this kind of moment for both of us where we're like, hold on, this is something that could veer into the realms of horror. So at that point, we really realized actually what this story was. And, you know, it was a drama that verges on a horror, you know, a psychological horror, albeit, because, you know, we can only imagine how horrific that would have been on that night. And the scariest thing about it, for me anyway, is, you know, while when the Titanic was actually going down, it went down and over the course of about 2.5 hours, so really fast, you know, for what was considered an unsinkable ship. But people didn't, like, when it hit the iceberg, genuinely, kids were just like playing with the ice on the deck, and it was just like, you know, no one really knew what was going on. Most people just went back to bed, to then, you know, have been woken up with your cabin, you know, probably half full of water. And, you know, Fred would have witnessed, you know, lots of this going on, you know, getting people into lifeboats, people passing him, literally passing him babies to put in a lifeboat. Just plays with your mind, and there's such kind of scary things there that we just felt like that's what this story needed.
Yeah, and I think, just to jump in as well, I think what we know, I mean, you know, being totally transparent, neither myself or Bjorn have suffered from PTSD or anything close to, but just using, you know, Fred's accounts, the stuff from the inquiry, everything we found online, even speaking to, you know, Simon Medhurst, who talks about, you know, what Robert Hitchin went through, and they all seem to have this reoccurring theme of just having these night terrors, these screams, these cries, the coldness, the chaos. It's just, I mean, we can only read between the lines, and as filmmakers, just try and visualize what that might have looked like. But that is such a huge element to this film, because we really want to know and tell people in such a visual way that Fred suffered, and he suffered a lot.
It's good that you bring up Simon Medhurst. I spoke to him on one of the earlier episodes of the podcast, and I think it's really interesting that, you know, you've got Frederick Fleet and you've got Robert Hitchens, who, after the sinking, Frederick Fleet, to my knowledge, not as much as Robert Hitchens and Second Officer Charles Lightoller, who quite, and Bruce Ismay as well, the chairman of the White Star Line, were very vilified and were criticised for surviving. But in the example of Charles Lightoller, he was extremely lucky to have survived. And by all accounts, you know, he actually shouldn't have, because it was so touch and go for him. But you can take this tragedy and, you know, it can overcome. In fact, well, the tragedy can take you. You know, you survive something like this and it overcomes you, and, you know, it leads to eventually Fred taking his own life. Or, in the case of Second Officer Charles Lightoller, he went on to save hundreds of men during Dunkirk. You know, he was actually in the Dunkirk film. They changed the character's name, but it is actually based on Charles Lightoller, who survived the Titanic sinking.
Wow.
He crammed like a ridiculous amount of soldiers onto a private boat and was able to save them. And I can't help looking at that and saying, I wonder if, either knowingly or unknowingly, Charles Lightoller was trying to save as many people as possible, because years before, he wasn't able to do that same thing. And that's not even to criticize, you know, well, you know, he did this amazing thing based on his tragedy, so why couldn't others? Not at all. I just think it's really fascinating the way that the human brain works, and on different levels, it can, the same event can affect different people so differently. Yeah.
And I just going on that, I think that's it. I think people experience, you know, trauma very differently and can handle it very differently. And I think, just going on again, what we know of Fred and what happened in the crow's nest, and, you know, I think, determined from what we saw on Tim Moulton's documentary, it's really difficult to understand, especially from the evidence we've got, what and how it actually happened. So, you know, Fred and Reginald Lee were the lookouts at the Titanic at the time, and spotted the iceberg so late, like incredibly late. And I think to them, it was just, I just don't think they realized why and how. And like I say, I don't know if your listeners or yourselves watched that documentary, but you'll know Tim's theorized about, you know, it was a complete freak of nature, really.
Mm-hmm.
The weather conditions, the air pressure causing, you know, obscurities and a mirage theory, and having no line on the horizon almost, because it was such a clear day. just obscured the vision, obscured the iceberg until the very last minute. And I, obviously Fred and Reginald Lee wouldn't have known that. Obviously we know that now potentially, but they wouldn't have known that at the time. So that playing on their mind over all these years going, why the hell didn't we see this iceberg? It was completely normal conditions for them to be traveling at the speed they were traveling. Even though they ignored some ice warnings, they were pretty confident they'd see it in, you know, a good amount of time to be able to maneuver from it. So I think for them, just going up through these years and like I say, Fred getting to the age of 77, just having that on his mind constantly, you know, we can only assume that would have just like eaten away inside.
Well, that cold water mirage theory that Tim Moulton brought up in the documentary, that was kind of a game changer in terms of the Titanic story, because there are so many things that that actually helps to explain. So you might be aware, you might not, there was dispute on the night, well, on that morning, I should say, of a mystery ship on the horizon.
Yes, yeah.
A lot of passengers could see what they thought was a trawler. Joseph Boxhall actually said in a BBC interview in the 60s that it was so close he could see people walking on its decks.
Yeah.
You know, he gives accounts that are kind of, you know, at one point he said that he rode under the ship's propellers, but, you know, actually we've looked back and that might not have been possible. But, you know, people's memories, especially when it's dark and when they're going through something traumatic, you know, you can forgive them maybe forgetting things or over exaggerating. But this mystery ship on the horizon, people said that it looked really close, and then they said it looked like it was sailing away. Some people said it was a star. And when you think of this mirage theory, you know, for people listening that might not quite understand what we're talking about with a cold water mirage, you know, on a really hot day when you're looking at a road and there's a car driving over a bump in the road, it might look like a big, long, rectangular black object until the car reaches the top of the curve and then you see it's a car.
Yeah.
And so this theory kind of puts forward, you know, it might have been a ship on the horizon. It could also have been a star that was very close to the horizon line. And this mirage was kind of elongating the star to look like a ship. And this idea of it, quote unquote, sailing away could have actually just been the star disappearing beyond the horizon. Or it could have been a ship, you know, and actually it could have been so far away, but the mirage made it look larger and look closer. Yeah. So you know, you guys have really done your research. So the fact that I'm able to sit and talk about cold water mirage theory with you, that's some like next level Titanic shit. I love it.
When you're telling a story like this, though, you know, you just can't afford to get stuff wrong. And that's something that we really cared about when telling Fred's story, down to, like, you know, every name in the script, every person we reference is you know, the real street, the real person, the real house number. It's you know, don't get me wrong, some things have to be fictionalized, but on the large part of this, it's all, you know, very true to life. And hopefully, like Johnny said, we've done our due diligence and got it all right.
It really seems like it. And with the kind of mood boards that you post on Instagram, if you don't follow this project on Instagram, you'll find it at Fred the Film. Even just for the visuals that are being put up, I think you really get across that you all care about this. And I feel like you wouldn't be making it if you didn't, because, I mean, it's an interesting story, but it's also one that happened, well, in terms of the sinking 110 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, a lot of people might look at this and say, you know, say it was Netflix, you know, might look at a script for this and say, well, you know, why are we doing this? What's the point? But I think in hearing you guys talk about it and seeing what you post on social media, it's the fact that it happened on the Titanic is kind of not the point. You know, Fred could have survived anything. It just so happens that he survived what is the most famous sinking and one of the most famous disasters in history. That's kind of past the point. The point is the impact that this had on him. I think you guys have really done your due diligence, and I think that your compassion and your empathy and sympathy really, really comes across, which makes it seem so... It just makes it seem like so much more than just a short film, quote unquote. You know, people would maybe don't get, you know, the idea of a short film, but I just think this seems really important.
I mean, yeah, we think so. We definitely think so. Like you say, we're not just telling a story about, you know, one of the most famous kind of catastrophes in human history, but, you know, a theme that, you know, is pretty real and genuine. You know, PTSD, undealt with trauma, these are things that people kind of go through, and that even now it can be brushed under the carpet. So, you know, something we really want to get out there. And, you know, we would obviously love the opportunity to really get to make this, and feeling like kind of no matter what, we're going to do that.
Yeah, oh, completely. So in terms of, you know, doing your research, which, you know, we've been saying that you clearly have, what's been the most interesting thing either about Fred and his story, or just the sinking in general, the aftermath, the lead up to it? What's been the most interesting thing that you didn't know beforehand that you've learned in doing the research?
I mean, there's a number of things, really. I think for us, again, just always being led by stories, really. I think going down this journey 12 months ago, I don't think we'd imagine speaking to, you know, descendants of people, you know, the quartermaster, for example. I think stuff like that, just being able to speak to, and we've had numerous Zoom calls with people, you know, within the Titanic community, and just unearthed so many, you know, fascinating yet tragic stories. And I think just adding to our knowledge of what others might have experienced as well, for me, has just been incredible. And, you know, this is one, you know, story in isolation. There are thousands of other stories that came out of the Titanic sinking, whether that be, like you say, something inspiring like Lightoller, or whether that was something tragic like Frederick Fleet. So I think for us, you know, I don't know if you saw in our Kickstarter, Aaron, actually, this film itself is a short film, but there is so much more to it. And currently in conversations about how we can potentially move this forward into, whether that be a film, whether that be, you know, a short mini-series of Fred and other characters within. So like for us, it's just been amazing just unearthing so many different stories about the Titanic and people involved.
Yeah, I kind of second that as well, everything that Johnny said there. But I think one of the things that I definitely didn't account for, which is great, is kind of how close myself and Johnny both feel to Fred now. Like when as much as, yeah, he was a real person, but when you create a character on the page and they start saying things and doing things, and you become really attached to them. And it's definitely at a point now where we just feel like Fred is ours. Like we know Fred so well. It almost feels like he's our relation. Anytime, you know, someone mentions Fred, we're like, oh, Fred. Like we just get it. Like we were so excited when we spoke to, Simon Medhurst, because, you know, albeit his great-great-grandfather was on the boat, but his great-great-granddad was on the rescue boat with Fred. And we were like, oh my God, his yeah. great-granddad was with Fred. We're like, we just felt that little bit closer to him. And that's something I never accounted for. Like when we first started sending drafts, it was just like titled Fred, just because we were like, okay, we'll figure out a name down the line. And it was just like, it can't be anything else. It's Fred. It's all about Fred. It is Fred. And I do love that, which is why even more so we haven't been able to yet. But I would absolutely love to try and find any descendants of Fred, whether it's whatever it is, whoever it is. There's got to be someone out there that's related to Fred, whether they know it or don't know it. Because Simon Medhurst, who obviously related to the quartermaster, didn't find that out till he was 45. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. By chance. So, you know, we'd love to get to meet someone that's related to Fred, because we feel like that about Fred. But that's something that, yeah, we definitely hold close to our hearts.
Yeah,
that would be headline news if, you know, a short film team had managed to track down a descendant of Frederick Fleet. That would be absolutely incredible. You might even have like an Anastasia moment where people start showing up saying, "I'm Anastasia," and you're like,
"Yeah,
prove exactly. it."
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, of course. And I mean, I just feel like the more we get the name out there and the word out there, surely people will people will, build it and they will come type of thing.
Yeah,
completely. Now, something that I really want to touch on, actually, is the cast. I'm looking at the cast right now, and I just think it's such good casting. So could you just kind of talk me through the kind of casting process and how that went about?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, we work with a casting director, CBA Casting, who's amazing. She's cast loads of our music videos for us and just, loves working with us. Kind of more than that, me and Johnny, we absolutely love casting. Like, honestly, the casting part of any project we ever do is one of the things we get most excited about, because we just feel like that is, that is where the story is brought to life. So to be fair, when we're writing a script, we're just bouncing around names and people, and we just was not struggling, but the right person just hadn't popped into our minds yet. And then we'd actually worked with Tom Brittany, who plays young Fred, before in a previous music video. And he's super, super talented guy. He just brings so much to the table. And we just reached out to him with the script very tentatively. And he came back with an amazing response. And we're just like, I love the script. I've been looking to do something like this for a while. And this just feels great. So that was brilliant. John, do you want to kind of
feel
the
rest? Max again. Max Beasley. We have a relationship with Max Beasley, the actor himself, and he actually suggested Max, his dad, who had starred in Shameless a number of years back, and we kind of had a meeting with Max Beasley Senior, and he just kind of ticked every box for us. We had him actually on the day when we shot that teaser. We actually shot that up in Blackpool, funnily enough. And we kind of met him and took him out for lunch. And he was just the most incredible character, and just rightly so, just knew so much about the Titanic and was so into the Titanic. And we instantly knew that this was our guy. And then, Deborah Stevenson was amongst a short list of people to play Dorothy. We obviously quite familiar face from TV. And, again, just had an incredible response from Deborah's team. And Deborah got on a Zoom call with Deborah and kind of chat through the project. And, again, she was just totally fascinated by the story. And I think she really related to wanting to tell this story from a PTSD point of view and supporting that. And just getting on board from there. So the three cast are locked and loaded and ready to go, really. Obviously, there's a number of other supporting roles, and it's been great. We've had so many people reach out wanting to be part of this, and kind of just pass those on to the CBA Casting for the time being, who's basically going to run some auditions and things in due course. But the three main cast are locked and loaded and ready to go, which is amazing for us, because we can really help drive this project forward with a great cast.
Yeah, definitely. Because I felt like I had to bring them up, because when I think of Fred the film now, Max's face is kind of emblazoned in my mind, and actually,
that's so good. I love that.
Tom's as well. That kind of cut from Tom shouting in the lifeboat to Max playing, older Fred. I just think it's become so kind of ingrained now.
Yeah.
And Max actually has the same surname as Survivor, Lawrence Beasley.
He does.
So don't know if there's a connection there. Who knows?
I'll tell you a little fact about this. Again, it's just so serendipitous and fatalistic and strange. But when we were chatting to, we call them Old and Young Max, because they're both called Max. we were chatting to both Maxes on a Zoom call, and Young Max said to us that he'd basically has a reoccurring dream that he basically drowned on the Titanic, and he's had this reoccurring dream like most of his life.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it was just like, what? It was just like, hat, like, so mad that he said that. And, we were chatting about this. So we've had a few little things like that actually that have cropped up. And another little, I'll give him a little behind the scenes fact for you. When we were shooting the green screen with Tom Brittany, so the bit what you just mentioned when he's in the rescue boat and he's saying row, row, we'd actually shot that, and that was originally just going to be two locked off shots, both Max and Tom staring to camera, and it would have just been a direct cut. and what a great actor Tom is, just suggested, let me just do something, and just started kind of screaming like, row, row. And it was like both of the hairs on my and Joey's arm stood up and were like, oh, okay, here we go. This is exactly what it's about. Like, this is what I mean. Like, we do our level, which is, you know, bringing the script to the table and directing, but then the actors, they bring it to another level and they start bringing things that we've not even considered to the table. Yeah. And that's what's so exciting for us. We've only had a taste of that, you know, just doing the teaser trailer, but I feel like we're just going to be like kids in a sweet shop when we're on set, because we're not... People are going to have to pull us away to tell us to stop filming, I think.
Oh, completely. And actually, speaking of the teaser trailer, in the background, people will have noticed that, of course, on the green screen, there has been inserted a really good render of the ship sinking. You know, and I don't mean to come across so shocked, like, oh, wow, it's actually good. But yeah, it can be quite easy to go wrong with Titanic. You know, there have been like big budget films, and you look at the ship and you go, what the hell is that? Like, you know, what have they done to the Titanic? But the renders, I honestly cannot stop looking at the post that you put up yesterday. And one thing, I'm just geeking out just now, that the fact that there's a port list on the ship, like, you know, people listening, they're all nodding, they're all praising the Titanic gods. But the port list is always like ignored. So even just that little attention to detail from your visual effects team, you know, the fact that they've put that on there, kudos.
Yeah, it's so nice you actually noticed that, and you wouldn't believe the effort we went to we must have had a 2-hour Zoom meeting with Johan, our head of VFX there. And we were just at the time. It was just, you know, the mannequin mock-up with, you know, a pretty much square boat in the background. But it was just figuring out the exact dimensions, the positioning, how far he was away from the boat. You know, do we see the water? Do we see people? And it was literally just such minor touches. And how much further do we bring the boat out? What's the angle? And it was just. It really was. It was like a 2-hour video call, just kind of figuring all that out, all to get to this stage. And, you know, I'm sure you're well aware the VFX element to this film is, you know, definitely the most costly and time consuming element as with any kind of VFX heavy piece or a period piece. So, you know, these guys who we've got on board, we've worked with them previously, and as soon as they saw the script and the treatment, they were just like, we want in. We'll kind of do you the best we can time wise and cost. And and if it wasn't for that, this would be next to impossible to make on the budget, just because those elements are so expensive to recreate.
That's it. And we've got, and what's great is this is just a teaser trailer with the VFX, but obviously in the actual film there's more moments of kind of you know, abstract VFX elements to the film, which we can't wait to bring to life. Obviously, it's always a task, and we do pride ourselves on it looking as real and as great as possible. Because, like you say, even big Hollywood films kind of get it wrong sometimes, and we were just so cautious of it not looking passable or believable. But you know, like Johnny said, Johan and the team, we've worked with them probably 2 or 3 times now on stuff, and they just totally get what they're doing, get us, and, you know, just completely smash it out of the park for us.
Yeah, well, I think it looks fantastic. And on Instagram, on Facebook, you know, within the community, we're always looking for more digital renders of the ship to ogle at. So it's always nice to have another one thrown in there. So I've already mentioned, but anyone listening, go to their Instagram, because on the Instagram for Fred the Film, you will see these renders, you'll see some behind the scenes shots, and you'll see the actors that we're talking about, and you'll also find their Kickstarter. There's a Linktree link in the bio of their Instagram, and you will find everything that you need in there. I just think it's fantastic, and I love it. So what, you know, and working on the film, you know, we've spoken about the casting, the visual effects, you know, even the kind of seed of an idea for it and eventually starting to write it. But kind of during all of this, what's been the most exciting and memorable part of working on the Fred project so far?
Oh, good question. It's really difficult to pinpoint it to one specific thing, but I mean, I would probably say, if I'm honest, the most exciting part so far was definitely launching the kind of the teaser trailer and the Kickstarter, because, you know, we've been, you know, largely working on this on our own, you know, in offices over Zoom for a year, talking about it. So finally getting to see people's reaction to it and hearing people say things and it being so, you know, nicely and well received. That's been really great, because it's kind of, you know, it gives you a bit of validation and you feel like, okay, we're actually doing something here that maybe means something to people and not just us. Yeah. So for me, it's definitely been seeing the response from people. But obviously now, you know, of course we've had a taste of that and we want to keep going with it.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I think, you know, I'm just looking at our Instagram now and just actually just having launched this, you know, 10 days ago almost, and having the response we've had. I think Fred's now up to, you know, over 950 followers on our Instagram. And, you know, we've had, I think as to date, we've had $5,000 pledged on our Kickstarter, which for us is just, I mean, we're still some way off the target, of course, but that it's just a bonkers amount to go. Actually, we launched this thing, you know, 10 days ago and, you know, like 60 odd people have willingly given their hard earned cash to a project, you know, for free, essentially, just because they want to see the light of day of this project. And it's just bonkers to know actually 10 days ago we did that and look where the project is at now. So if we can do that in 10 days, you know, where would we be next year? And it's one of those, really. I think ultimately we need the money to make this. You know, we've invested quite a bit over the last year of you know, our own money to try and get this off the ground. And it kind of just needs to be, you know, we just need to make the film. So we just need as many donations as possible to get it up to that point. We just actually, funnily enough, got featured on Kickstarter today. Just went live. We got featured on Kickstarter's featured projects, and they've just added us to projects we love. So hopefully that gives us an extra little boost of donations. So fingers crossed. But you know, I think it's validation. We're doing the right thing, and hopefully if you give us a chance to make it, we'll kind of show you where the money goes and show you what we can do.
Yeah, and I think that shows just how kind of omnipresent the Titanic disaster still is. You know, even, you know, obviously every April the TV is littered with documentaries about it and films, and that's great. You know, we love to see it. But, you know, the fact that you've been able to raise, you know, you're at $5,000, still a long way to go, but still, like you're saying, in just over a week, you know, you're at $5,000. People are still hungry for not just stories to connect to the Titanic and, you know, well told stories, but stories coming from a different angle and stories portraying the humanity of it. And I think it will be really interesting going forward, you know, if there's ever another kind of big budget Titanic, or if there's another TV series, whether it's on Netflix or ITV, BBC or something, how they approach these characters, and if they start to take the cues from, you know, people like Simon Medhurst and yourselves, who are really approaching it in a different way, and approaching it in a way that I think is resonating with people. Because, you know, the thing that was lost in the sinking wasn't the ship. The thing that was lost, it was people.
Yep.
And it was, in some cases, people's sanity, people's sense of security and their comfort. So I think it's really, it's telling, you know, that people are so into this and in such a short space of time, because it's almost at this point, it's like a parable. It's like a religious tale. It's just so kind of huge in scope. The story of Titanic, even if James Cameron had never made his film, because his is kind of the go-to, and he made it very epic. But just in itself as a story, there's just so much. And you'd mentioned that Fred was on lifeboat number 6. with Robert Hitchens and Molly Brown, you know, who went on to have a musical about her. You know, Debbie Reynolds played her in the film. Even just that one lifeboat in itself, you could have a whole film about.
Yeah.
And the stories just kind of keep writing themselves. And we kind of alluded earlier to the fact that, you know, there will be thousands of stories that came out of this disaster, and so many of them will be untold because they're not known. But I think that is what really keeps the Titanic in people's minds and keeps communities like our own thriving, because there's always something new to learn and to ponder on. So I'm really glad that you are making this, and I'm really, really glad to see that it's getting the attention that it's getting, because it deserves it. It really does.
Thank you, Anne. That's that's really kind of you, and yeah, it means a lot.
So you touch on this on your page and on your website, but it'd be nice to kind of hear you talking through it. Who and what are your biggest inspirations, as you know, as filmmakers and just as individuals? You know, who are your biggest inspirations?
John, do you want to go first?
In general, in film, I mean, there's so much to list. I think from, it sounds really cliche to say as a filmmaker or director, but I think for us, like, we're always drawn to just compelling storytelling. I think for us, like, you know, as much as we love cinematography and VFX elements in films, we're just always drawn back to just great storytelling. And it doesn't have to be shot particularly great. It's just if it's an amazing story we bought in. I think that's always what we're kind of drawn to.
I mean, yeah. are we talking specific people here, Aaron?
It could be anything. It could be, you know, one film you watched years ago and that inspired you. It could be, you know, a director, a writer, a singer.
I mean, yeah. There's loads of, you know, writers, directors, cinematographers out there that we love. I mean, a couple of directors that I really love are writer directors called the Safdie brothers, who did Good Time and Uncut Gems. That's just two films that I just think are outstanding from script to screen, really. I'm so excited about what they're going to do next. So I'm really following those guys. I mean, writing people like, you know, of course, Aaron Sorkin, who's a trailblazer for kind of writers and, you know, amazing. You know, you've got that bit more kind of, maybe me and Johnny really connect over, you know, Chris Nolan and what he does, how he plays with time. We love that. There's a very, very slight element of that in Fred, but that's something we always try and introduce into our films. We like the idea of perception of time. They're just a couple of people off the top that I would, you know, for me personally, that I'm really drawn to.
I think, you know, a classic reference, which everyone will know, but something that, you know, we always relate back to, and there's so many elements to this, but the way kind of Spielberg did Saving Private Ryan for us, in so many elements, that the, you know, the nature of it being shot on film, the story, I mean, just growing up watching that, I think I must have watched that umpteen times, but for me, that just film just encapsulates so much of what we love about film.
Yeah. And you mentioned Christopher Nolan there, and it's funny because he's the director of Dunkirk, which I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
So he was the one that kind of had that little nod in there to Charles Lightoller, although he changed the name, which is strange. I don't know why. And finally, what advice would you guys give to people who want to pursue creative endeavors or passion projects?
Yeah, I think you answered it in the question, really. I think for us, I mean, we've kind of tried to do our own thing for a number of years now, and I think it's always really important to just try and make time for your own projects and stuff that you feel kind of most represents you. And that might be, you know, a passion project. It might mean actually taking time to pursue something that you are really passionate about, that you can put time in, that you feel best represents the kind of level of work you want to do. And you know, a lot of the time, and again, you'll know this, Aaron, short films obviously don't really come with much financial reward. So it's often a case of putting a lot of time, effort and your own investment into it. But actually what you get out of it is a piece of work that is completely you and completely what represents the level of where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, my advice really would just be, we're in a time now where resources are all around us, and you know, you are able to just go out and do stuff and just make it. Like, you know, you don't necessarily need to wait around for this or for that or for the other. Of course, you're going to have the obvious constraints financially and things like that, but there's nothing stopping you just going out and just doing it. And look, that's us. That's how we started out. Like I say, we didn't go to a film school. We're not, you know, we didn't go through any kind of education system in this industry. We just kind of just did it and kept doing it and are still doing it. So if that's anything to go by, you know, that's what we live by. And that's the kind of the best advice I personally would give to someone.
Yeah, no, that's so true. You know, especially when you think nowadays phones, you know, they've all got cameras on them, okay, of exactly. Varying degrees of quality. But, you know, music videos are getting shot on phones now.
Yeah.
There are a few films, like feature films, have been shot on mobile phones.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're totally right that the resources are there and the stories are just kind of waiting to be told. And Fred has been waiting to be told for a long time, and it's just really nice to see that that you guys are doing this. So,
thank you, Aaron.
No problem. Thank you both very much for coming on, and for talking to me. This has been, like I say, it's just ticks so many boxes for me and pushes a lot of buttons, and I'm just really excited to see where it goes. And I just wish you both all the best with the project, and I want everyone listening to look up Fred the Film on Instagram. Check it out, because as soon as you see the page, you'll fall in love with what these guys are doing. And please go onto their link tree in the bio, go onto their Kickstarter, and pledge as much or as little as you can, because every penny helps to get this amazing film and idea out there into the world. So I would just really encourage everyone to please go and check it out.
Absolutely. Thank you, Aaron. That's honestly so kind of you to have us on board and to chat with you as well. This is this has been a great use of our time as much as yours. So thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Aaron. Thank you so much for having us on.
Thanks so much. Take care, guys. Okay, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Will do. You too.